Welcome to An Industry in Transition, the must-listen-to podcast for financial advisors and industry leaders from Tony Siriani, the CEO and publisher of Advisor Hub, where we explore the week's news and events and put our ever-changing business into perspective. Tony is joined each week by industry leaders, mavericks, and disruptors who give their take on our industry and their thoughts on where we are headed. If you want to remain relevant, you can't miss it. Now, here's your host, Tony Siriani.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Industry in Transition Zoom call with me, Tony Siriani. But we're very lucky to have Joe Duran here today. Joe, welcome, Joe.
Hi, how are you, Tony? Good to see you.
I'm fine. We talked about the hat. I'll just mention it. I have the type of hair that once you put a hat on, you can't take it off and go into it. It's just not going to look right. So
and
I'm not trying to pretend
to know that you have a tractor at home.
That's exactly true. See, now, Joe, now you're getting with it. I have a tractor. But you know, normally I would say if I had your hair, I'd be president of the United States. But it's not that great, Joe. It's just you've done pretty well with what you have. We're making all of us follically challenged people proud. So, look, last time we talked, I guess, was, you know, November. And we were doing our big event. And we talked a little bit about COVID and some of the things that were going on. But it's been a challenging year still. But you guys have done pretty well during that time. I mean, what's it like to be in a challenging year, but as part of Goldman Sachs now instead of running, you know, your own firm?
Well, I'd say just two things. One, a huge relief not having to deal with coming up with the policies and rules of what do I do with 100 locations. Right. So, you know, that really helped. And then obviously we had that big meltdown in the market in the early part of it. Not having to worry about payroll and all those kinds of good things was really nice. So a relief on many levels on that front. Secondly, I'd say just on the business side, because we had rolled out all of the referral programs, we changed the name of the firm to Goldman Sachs Personal Financial Management in April, and that had been scheduled. That was right at the beginning of the pandemic. And at the same time, we launched all of our referral programs, and that worked out really, really well. We have never brought on more clients than we did over that the subsequent year. So from April to April, we've never brought on more clients, all virtual, of course. So it was really amazing to move everyone to work from home and onboard more clients than we ever have in a span of 12 months. So quite just, a unique experience.
The referral program, help me out with that. So what is that all about? I mean, this sounds pretty good. If I'm an advisor sitting and I can get a referral from Goldman Sachs, that actually sounds like that may be a worthwhile referral.
Yeah. So there are three levels of referrals. Obviously, we work with the custodians. That dried up a lot in the very beginning of the pandemic, as you can imagine. The branches were all closed down. That was historically our biggest source of referrals at old United Capital, still at Goldman Sachs. But two other things that were new. One was the referrals from private wealth. As you know, Goldman Sachs has an ultra high net worth division. Their typical clients have north of $50 million. And they have lots of friends and family who need help but couldn't get served by Goldman Sachs. Well, those referrals now come to our offices around the country. And we have over $2 billion that was referred last year to our offices, just from April to December, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
The third stream of referrals for us is I'm now co-head of ACO as well, which we call the Personal Financial Management Group. And ACO, as you know, does executive wellness and financial planning for executives and C-suites of very large Fortune 1000 companies. And many of those corporates have asked, can we deliver planning to the next level of executives, not in the C-suite. And as you can imagine, there are a lot of folks at very large companies that are making $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 a year who aren't in the C-suite, you know, being the CEO or CFO, who we can serve. And that was several $1 billion in referrals as well. And there were layoffs that occurred, and we helped to do the planning for all of those people. Many of those people ended up becoming clients. They elected, but the first thing we do is to offer planning. So our advisors did planning for thousands of individuals. Many of those folks end up becoming clients afterwards. So again, so those are the three big legs of the stool that have really led to incredible growth.
The other advantage you have is you were always a tech forward firm. You could argue maybe that's one of the best things that Goldman Sachs got out of the transaction was the technology and you.
Yeah, but
the
ability to gamify, because we'd gamified the entire client experience and created tools that brought the clients into the decision making, helped us understand their biases, etc. It was just really easy to bring clients through the entire experience, get to know them in a virtual way without feeling like there was a big drop off. So everything we'd done, because about a third of all of our client meetings historically were video based, it was not
which was a high number. That's a high number because it wasn't that way. Look, I think as an industry, we did pretty well. I think but people had fits and starts to figure it out, right? And you didn't have those fits and starts.
No, because again, a lot of our clients were younger, and what we found is our older clients weren't comfortable videoing. Well, now, of course, everyone's accustomed to it. And many people now are like, why do I need to get in the car and drive? Let's just do it this way. So, you know, again, what we've done is we've made everyone video-based, native. And that's almost like when email became the thing for the next generation. So now everybody's trained to this way of working. I think the hardest part, obviously, is how do you help your staff to go back to work when they've gotten accustomed to working from home?
Well, but I think that's worthwhile talking about because I don't think that's I think for some people it's a real challenge, you know. And if you're so two sides of it. One side is I'm Merrill Lynch, Morgan Stanley, you know, a big wirehouse firm, and now I've told my guys for years you can't work from home. It's impossible, right? You just can't be done. Bad things happen. The world's going to end if you work from home. Right. Don't listen to what Joe Duran is saying. If he tells you it's a bad idea. Yeah. And then you have, you know, the guys start doing it and suddenly it's like, well, this is pretty good. You know, I can do
so
it.
So here's the thing you've got to ask. First of all, I think there's two sets of functions you have to think about. There's the back office and there's the front of house. The back office functions can literally be done anywhere. Now, in some functions like onboarding new clients and everything else, there's efficiencies to being in a room together and making sure that you've got all this stuff taken care of. And that's the area where we've had the biggest challenges, honestly. We do paperless onboarding, but the work streams are just harder to digitize. If you have people in a room together, it's, hey, I'm missing this piece. Do you have this number? Whatever. Like, that's just easy to do, hard to do with Zoom. The face-to-face meeting, I have come to a new place of thinking about this, which is, there are a lot of advisors who will now say, I'll just do this digitally. And in fact, I think there will be a massive advantage to the advisors who realize that they'll be alone doing client events and meeting in person. And in fact, I would suggest that while the long-term will be much more virtual in nature, you want to lean into physical presence because very few people are doing it and people are craving it. That doesn't mean, again, that your next meeting can't be virtually. But I would lean into my first client meeting, if it's geographically convenient, being in person, because there is something you miss. Now, again, it's not necessary. We've shown that over the course of the last year. But what you have to think about, no different than investing, is in order to capture a niche and to grow, you have to go where everyone else isn't. And right now, everyone is video. So I would suggest that you should actually be leaning in to your first meeting and making clear you're video native, but actually saying, hey, should we have lunch? Again, well, presuming everyone's safe, you know?
Yeah, people are like, there's pent up demand for human contact, you know what I mean? As a practical matter. And I think that even though, because I think this whole video thing with seniors came back because they wanted to see their grandkids. So they started doing Zoom calls. Once they figured out they could do it. And the fact that the doctor can look at a mole on their neck and say, you need to come in or not, right? You know, via Zoom. So now it's okay for your lawyer or your guy, your financial guy. But at the end of the day, firms like yours, we've got to sort of figure out what this new world's going to be like. Look, I think if you're going to invest $5 million, unless we have COVID, you're going to want to shake hands and meet the person that you're going to invest $5 million, right? Maybe if you're buying
something else too. Look, and here's the nuance that's really important. And this is true, which almost every Zoom that I start with anyone I work with or any client, I spend the first 5 minutes not talking about work, just connecting. The part that we've all lost are the soft edges that build relationships, not just in a professional sense, but in a work sense too. Like, not just getting new clients, but working with your staff. when you're in person, you're used to, hey, let's go grab some coffee. Hey, I'm sorry if I was brisk with you at that meeting. That doesn't happen with Zoom. Those, the edges are very sharp. And very it's sharp. Like, get on, do the work, get off. And many advisors are not realizing, hey, you can't go from one meeting to the next. And because you're in Zoom mode, I call it the Zoom vortex. You just go straight to the next Zoom, forgetting that this person you're on with has just not had a full day of Zooms. It's their first Zoom. And you've got to connect with them and reset. So the one thing I say to everyone is, look, turn it off. Take at least 2 minutes to remember that the person you're talking to is probably not at the end of 8 Zooms. You know, my Zooming starts at 5. It can be done at 6. And I might be in the middle of the day way in. But you have to remember, this is a new, fresh interaction, even though you're using the same format. And unlike the old days where you could walk out, go to the next room, greet them at the reception area, and have this soft edges.
Or at least say, how's the weather? How was your ride in?
All of the stuff that reminds you that we're not just working machines, we're humans. And so again, one suggestion I give, just whether it's in person or not, just bringing back the human empathy piece that connects people.
That's fantastic. That's a great advice, because it's Zoom etiquette, and we could all use a little bit extra Zoom etiquette, you know? I noticed, just obviously this is anecdotal, I'm seeing you got a lot of young people working with you in the office. It's nice to see people back in the office. But the young people have suffered in my mind too, now that we're on this topic. Those soft edges are very important for people who are starting in this business. Mentors, just the fact that, hey, Joe, I had coffee with Joe during the week, or Joe took me out to lunch, or my manager took me, or we just got together. I have two daughters that are, you know, 24 and 26, and they've both been promoted to managers. They're doing really well, but they haven't been to the office that much. They've only been, it's been a year, half they're working.
We have, our industry is an apprenticeship culture. You learn by osmosis. It's not like you automatically can teach somebody how to be great meeting with clients. They have to see it. They have to see what works and what doesn't. How does it translate to how I work? And so again, we have been very encouraging. As soon as people have been vaccinated, get back in. I think you've heard we're opening. Everybody, June 14th, is encouraged to come back to the office. The challenge, of course, is this like all extreme events, you have very binary reactions. So we have a lot of people who are like, I won't take the shot. I don't want to do PCR testing. I don't want to come into an office because people aren't vaccinated. And there are people who are the exact opposite side of the fence. I've been vaccinated. I want to come in. I don't want to have to wear a mask. You have to be understanding that everyone is different. I think the way we're dealing with this is to say, look, our preference is everyone is here, but we understand that everyone is unique. And we want to take that into account so we can come up with specifically what's best for you. You also, some firms, and this, I've obviously we have offices, 100 of them around the country. Some offices are going to say, we're going to do client days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or we're going to do Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Those days, everyone should be in the office. And then Tuesday, Thursday will be remote day, and we'll do all Zooming with the clients. Or we'll do planning for the week ahead on Friday. Let's do that in person. So I think the idea is to ensure that you have a plan, because what does not work is to be completely opaque and not give people a sense of what normal might look like in this new world. And it's going to be very different for everyone. That's the other thing that we've got to be
in. Getting a little bit of a sense, based a little bit on what you were saying, you know, in the beginning, and this is my sensibility too, is that the totally, totally remote thing, well, it's a great, you know, opportunity. It's not a real fit for this business, 100%. But as you're planning, you got 100 offices, right? And you said it's different everywhere. And it's also different based on the skill sets and the age of the people in the office. There's a lot of factors that go into it. There's got to be a real estate savings somewhere. You know, there's got to be a way to say, hey, you know,
I do wonder. I wish that were true. I'm not sure. Again, real estate is not the expense in our industry. 70% of cost are the people in the offices, not the offices themselves. And the reality is it's not that much cheaper when you look at the loss of efficiency when they leave the office, if that person isn't working as hard as they used to. And we should not deny the fact that we do have some of our employees who don't want to come back to work because they like not working as hard, unfortunately. I don't think that's the majority, but we for sure have people who kind of like going and working out and then having coffee with their spouse in the middle of the day when they're getting paid to work. Now, again, that's not everyone. Most people are working and doing their jobs. But the reality is there are people who don't really want to go back to work.
You know, but there's also
a myriad of reasons, right?
Yeah. But there are also RIAs out there, right, that are and a lot of businesses, a lot of, you know, hybrid businesses that are really marginally profitable. So, I mean, you know, you're in that 10, you know the way that a P&L looks, right, for this business. Yeah. If you could save 10% or 12% on a P&L, you saved a lot and you've doubled your profitability.
Again,
in some instances.
If it has no impact on your sustainability and your future growth, and that is the question, because, again, if your people aren't going to be as productive, or you lose that person, and now there's, because here's the thing that I have absolutely noticed, the connective tissue is much less, much less, especially for younger people who haven't been here. So, you know, we hired a bunch of people, hundreds of people at PFMG over the course of last year. They don't know what it means to be part of the team. They don't even know who the team is other than by this. And so, again, the cultural fabric that gets lost should not be ignored. There's a lot of value to being around great people, you know.
Yeah, especially for young people too. Yeah. It's a little bit easier for you and I, but it's much harder for a young person who's never been in an office and has not had that. I really like the idea that you said there's an apprenticeship type culture, because it really is.
What we're doing, just so you know, is we're building out our new offices now to include choir rooms, where if you're a tech person or you're in finance and accounting, you can go to a quiet area where nobody Zooms. So like libraries, quiet rooms with more space and quiet. And then you can have outside areas with Zooms and meeting rooms. So the layout of your geography might be different. It might be bigger, it might be smaller, but it will be different. And we're working on that right now. We're consolidating 180 people in Newport, 200 people in Newport at the end of the year. And we're reimagining what should this look like? Because I think there'll be a day when I come in and I'm like, you know what? I need to concentrate and write, do this deck, and I can go to the quiet room. And then later on, I can go to an area where it's more social and there's more of a living room set up where we can talk and work together. And I think that makes work compelling, with cafeterias and common areas and Zoom rooms,
I sort of agree that I feel like this whole notion, and it was sort of big like 10 years ago and never quite got the traction it needed, where you had a room where you, a nice looking room where you meet clients that might be, you know, you'd be able to have water, drinks, coffee, whatever you wanted to have there. And then the back was what you're seeing behind you, a sales desk kind of thing, because you really don't need fancy offices, or you're on a sales desk type of atmosphere, which has its own energy. Versus that. That's a much smaller office footprint, by the way, Joe, than we're talking about.
Well, look, I haven't had an office in over a decade. You know, I've always been out in the cubes. I only came here so that the noise from everyone else doesn't bother us. But I don't believe that a leader should be in a private closed-in office. It's never worked for me. I want to be accessible. I want to be reachable. I want to feel like I know what's going on around me. It's not for everyone, I know, but for me, it was a huge uptick in my productivity. And I think, frankly, the people who aren't in the room want to know what's going on. So when you're out in the open, nobody feels like, oh my God, there's secrets going on, you know?
Right. Well, I think that was it. I don't know if you remember this, but I worked at Legg Mason at one time, and that was a Legg Mason thing. None of our offices had doors.
Yeah.
So even if you had an office, you couldn't have a door. You know what I mean? And the senior leadership sat in sales desk, which was kind of nice. Yeah, it was a good feeling. All right. So we've talked a lot about that, which I'm glad we did, because I think that's good advice. I love the Zoom etiquette stuff. But now that you've been doing this a while, how long has it been?
About almost two years.
You've also, you know, been an entrepreneur, right? You've had two of these, then now that you've been doing so. Now that you've done this, other than giving people advice like, hey, sell to Goldman Sachs if you can, that's one good idea. What would be another thing, a bit of advice for the, you know, the burgeoning entrepreneur, which is maybe even just what you're seeing in the space out there now?
Well, first, be in America. You know, I came here with $200. I sold my first firm to General Electric, next one to Goldman Sachs, both Dow 30 firms, only in America. You know, so that'd be the first rule. I have a very simple expression for every entrepreneur. It's called cash. And it's an acronym for the first thing is clarity. When you're an entrepreneur, your success is only based on one thing. How clearly do you articulate what you're here to do? And I start with one simple question. What problem is your business solving? It's remarkable how few entrepreneurs can clearly articulate, we are here to solve this problem. And if you can't declare that, then when people, employees come in, or clients come in, or prospects come in, you can't answer the question, then everything you're doing isn't solving that issue. So for me, the problem we were solving is the fact that people were thinking too much about their money and not enough about their lives. So I said, we're going to focus on helping people live richly rather than die rich. That's going to be our driving force for this firm. And everything we did was, does it simplify their lives? Is it personal? Is it human? Does it bring the best of us to help them with their whole financial life? And that made it clear. So when I hired people, if they weren't interested in that, don't come work here. And when we would tell clients or prospects, if they weren't interested in that, they shouldn't come to us. Most entrepreneurs are not clear enough about that and their mission and purpose, and they therefore limit their success. The second one is adaptability. Most entrepreneurs, like me, are driven by raging insecurity, and we think we have to be right. I'll get to this in a second, but most importantly, you can't be dogmatic or stubborn because the spreadsheet you designed will not be right. It's just like every financial plan that's ever written is wrong the day it's written. Your business plan will be wrong. And I'm writing a book right now called The Voyage, talking about entrepreneurship. It's my fourth book. The basic premise is very simple. When Christopher Columbus set out, he thought he would find something, but he actually found something completely different than he imagined. Now, his finding turned out to be even better than getting to India, but it wasn't at all what he expected. There is not one entrepreneur when they set off that end up in the same destination they imagined they'd get to. Not one. I've never met one, and I've done this twice, and it ended up completely different than I imagined in size and scope and the pain and what it took to get there. You needed a bunch of luck and persistence and everything else, but you had to be willing to adapt. And if you don't adapt, you'll fail because your plan will not work the way you designed it. The third is sustainability. And by that, I mean that the business has to be bigger than the founder. It's very hard to realize that the job of any great entrepreneur is to ensure that their business survives without their need to be there. And that ultimately it's like raising a child. I have three daughters. And my proudest thing is when my two oldest are old enough to stand on their own two feet. The same is true of a business. If it is completely dependent on you, you're automatically diminishing its value because there's an inverse relationship between value of the business and your importance to the business. That doesn't mean you can't be really important, but you have to have really good people that run the business well without you. And then the last is humility. You have to be open to being wrong. It's remarkable how many of us think our job is to be right rather than to find the right answer. And often I'm not gonna have the answer. My job is not to have the answer. My job is to ensure the right answer is executed. And so I always say, like, you don't have to be right, you have to do right. Don't ever forget that. Doing right is more important than being right. And of course, when you're the founder, you think, because we've been shown this, you have to be certain, you have to know the answers. Well, I've never found that to be true. People like my vulnerability. They like the fact that I say, you know what? I don't know about this. Tell me. And it helps you to attract much better talent when they have room to grow and do things that you're not able to do. And so if you hire people better than you in each capacity, you will build something much greater than you could ever by yourself.
That's fantastic advice. Of course, I'm never wrong, but I could see where you could be wrong, Joe, you know. But I want to end on that note because we've been doing this about 25 minutes. I think that was a great summation and something that people could take away. So I really like that. I want you to add in there that everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. I like that Mike Tyson quote too. You know, you got to add that to the repertoire. But appreciate you being here. This was great, and I'm glad we'll talk again. But I'm glad we heard a lot about where you guys are and where you're going.
Thank you, Tony. I appreciate it.
Great.
Thanks for joining us this week on An Industry in Transition. Make sure to visit our website, www.advisorhub.com, and subscribe to Advisor Hub. It's free, and you won't miss any advisor news or events. While you're on site, check out all the podcasts available. Click on the Deals pages and Resources tab for valuable content, or check out the Market section with its guru predictions, latest fintech offerings, you name it. Feel free to email Tony Sirianni about specific questions we can address on the show. He can be reached by email at contact@advisorhub.com. Please note that all requests and questions are handled with complete discretion and confidentiality. Thank you for listening, and be sure to tune in next week for the next Industry in Transition episode.